I wonder if in some ways this whole process has felt like a birth of sorts. So how has putting a book out into the world
honestly felt anything I think it's like it? It's easier to have a baby in some ways.
This is Heart of the Story, and I'm Nadine Kenny Johnstone. I'm a writer and a writing coach who helps women develop and publish their memoirs and essays. But most importantly, I'm a human who's always trying to figure out what my soul is saying. Each week, I'll share stories and tips of healing, hope, and following my heart so that you'll feel inspired to follow yours.
Hi, everyone. You are in for such a treat today because I have with me the memoirist, Peg Conway, whose book, The Art of Reassembly, is coming out on November 9th. I coached Peg through this journey, and I could not be happier to see this book on the shelves and into the hands of readers everywhere. Peg is talking with us today about her journey from the seed of the idea all the way to publication and everything in between. So I welcome the incredible writer, Peg Conway.
Thank you, Nadine. I'm delighted to be here.
Peg, this is a really exciting time. Overwhelming, I'm sure, too, but a really exciting time. So can you tell what your book is about?
Sure. So the subtitle of my book is A Memoir of Early Mother Loss and After Grief. And it recounts my journey of grieving the loss of my mother when I was a child, which has been an iterative process over different stages of my life. Because when I was a child, we didn't talk about things very much. And then changes happened in my family. And then it kind of all came up dramatically in young adulthood. And I've been working with it at different points ever since. And so it's really a journey of uncovering my history and coming to terms with it and kind of forming a story of myself, a self-understanding, and engaging in a lot of work to be compassionate toward myself and really understand what happened.
Yeah. I think the reason why I love your book so much is that I feel that you hit on so many universal truths that no matter what kind of loss other people have gone through, they will find a connective thread with what you've written about. All of us, if we've lived a life, have experienced something at this point. And when I read your words, I felt like you were telling all readers that whatever you're feeling is all right, and that we could be really self-compassionate, and that no matter what point we're in this sort of grieving and repair process, that there is hope and healing for us. That's what I felt after reading your book. And so I can't wait for readers to dive into it. And I want to talk a little bit about when you talk about this sort of like after grief, I actually find that it's really common. So can you talk with listeners a little bit about what you mean by like the loss that happened after your early mother loss and what that triggered?
Well, the word after grief comes from Hope Edelman's book by that name. And it refers to the time after the loss where life has moved on and yet the loss is still with you and very present in its own way, no matter how many years have gone by. And I find that just so compelling for me in my experience of living with loss over many, many years and grappling with it at different points. There's also, and I think this is described in my book, there can be secondary losses that come after someone has died, the changes that come in one's life, especially as a young person, but really at any time when someone loses their spouse or loses someone close to them, life changes. You have to reorganize things and sometimes you have to move. Just a lot of things that can change in daily life because someone is no longer there. My book addresses a lot of that around how it all plays out over time.
And for you in particular, it was your friend who got into a car accident, right? And that triggered things for you.
Yes. When I was in my mid-20s, I was living with a really good friend from high school. And I had driven her to work one morning and she was hit by a car as a pedestrian. It wasn't strictly speaking a car accident. Fortunately, she made a full recovery. It's doing, you know, that was years ago, but she's doing very well. I'm always quick to say that because it sounds as traumatizing even here in some ways. But that my reaction to that event was very surprising to me, and it was long lasting. Like, of course, it's upsetting in the moment, but I kept being upset. I kept being weepy and anxious and feeling very strange. And finally, I became very curious about, like, what is this? And it kind of felt familiar, but in ways that I didn't fully understand. And finally, it dawned on me, this is how I felt when I was a child, right after my mom died. And it was like this epiphany and light bulb moment of, wow, could that really be? Could I really be kind of feeling things that happened long ago? I mean, it was a very life-changing realization and just very powerful that led to a lot of further personal growth and examination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found that part of your memoir really, really moving because it's a reminder to all of us that there are still parts of us that need some healing and these things will happen. And it seems like out of nowhere, the emotions come and they might even feel surprising. What is this? What's going on? But then when we do the work, the deep work that you did, we do find the connections. We do find the parts that haven't quite healed yet, or maybe need a little bit of love and attention. And so that's another area of your book that I just found really, really powerful and very universally connecting. So there are so many parts of your book that I love, and I don't want to spoil too many parts, but I think that listeners will also be curious about this journey. Mm-hmm. So let's first start off with a little bit of background about you, like who you are, what sort of things you've done professionally, personally, and then we'll talk about how this seed of an idea came to be.
Well, I live in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is where I'm from. And I studied English and journalism, and because writing and communications have always been my thing. I worked for several years for a consulting firm before I was married and had children. I gave most of my energy to being a mom for quite a few years. But in that time, I also was very jazzed about childbirth. That was a very powerful experience to me. And I wanted to serve other women. And I did some writing about that as well. And then when my kids were more grown, I kind of focused more on writing. And that's kind of what led into writing the book. And at the same time, I became very interested through some friends in energy healing. And I'm also a certified healing touch practitioner.
Mm-hmm. And I personally feel like all of those backgrounds merged together in this book and in this process, because we definitely get to feel that sort of healing, supportive tone to your writing. And I wonder if in some ways this whole process has felt like a birth of sorts. So how has putting a book out into the world
honestly felt anything I think it's like easy, it? It's easier to have a baby in some ways.
Tell me more.
Well, no, that's a bit of an exaggeration. Both processes require a lot of support, though, and different support at different stages of the journey. Mm-hmm. I started writing the book about almost 6 years ago, and it kind of came about. I never thought I would write a memoir. It kind of crossed my mind at different points, but I thought, I don't think I need to relive all that. And I don't know if I remember enough to write about it. I didn't feel a lot of pull toward it. And then I had two things happen. The movie Wild, when I saw the movie of Cheryl Strayed's memoir, which I had not read at that point, I thought I was seeing a movie about a hike. And then I realized, oh, this is a mother loss story. Tell me more. I mean, I was really engrossed and just really very touched by it. And around that same time, I was in an online writing course and we had to write, the prompt was something about a vacation. And I ended up writing about my friend being hit by the car, which happened on a day when I was about to leave on a vacation. And then thinking about other things I had written through the years, I realized I've always been writing about this. Loss or grappling with change, those kinds of things have been a recurring theme in my writing. Maybe there is something here. So that kind of like began to percolate.
Yeah. And, you know, I coach a lot of writers and many will say, I don't know what to write about. And I'll say, well, what have you been writing about? Because when writers look back at these little things that they think are just scribblings and they think are just little snippets of scene that aren't anything, when they look back, they see a pattern. Either it's like a theme, oh, I keep writing about early mother loss, or I keep writing about this or that, or they'll find that they keep coming back to the same story or the same moment. And they say, wait a minute. So sometimes it's this looking for the evidence that's right in front of you. So let's keep going with this because I'm really interested. So you see the movie Wild, you wrote that scene, and then when did you say, all right, I'll write this book? And did you think it would become a book?
Well, it was still a question. At that point, it was a question. Can I write a memoir? Do I want to write a memoir? Do I have it in me to write this memoir? And I signed up for an online group called Mini Memoir with a writer named Jenna Schwartz. And it was a 2-week thing where we had several prompts a week. And it was all about writing about one experience from different points of view, different aspects of this, of a particular experience. And I chose a different moment from my childhood. And it was very rich, very new memories arose, you know, kind of found myself writing about new memories. By the end of that couple of weeks, I was like, wow, there's really something here. And I want to pursue this. And I think each step, like at that step, I was like, well, I'm going to take this next step. I'm going to keep writing about this. I'm going to explore more chapters of my life, more time periods. And I was also writing about my current life, which I sometimes called living the memoir, because my dad had died and my stepmother was declining from cancer. And it was bringing up a lot of stuff that related to the past things as well. And so it was a very fertile time of writing, truthfully. And writing was also a very important tool of coping and self-understanding. And I felt that it was valuable and felt very committed to it, regardless of whether it became a book. I wasn't committed to a book at that point.
Yeah. I love what you say about living the memoir. Oftentimes people feel like, oh, well, this is just journaling. I'm really close to this experience right now. And I'm just journaling. I'm just putting it on the page. But I say, you never know what that might become. And it ended up finding a place in your book. And like you said, it also resurfaced these other memories. And so I find that even when people think, oh, my memory is foggy, or there's no way I could write a memoir, couldn't possibly remember all these things. When you have real life experiences that kind of jog those old memories, or you're looking at a photo album or even old journals.
I really experienced it strongly as an excavation, like digging through layers. In fact, someone I know from high school is like, she has a degree in history and she went on like an archaeological excavation type thing at a historic site and was writing about it on social media. And I reached out to her because I was so interested in what do people do in that kind of work? And we had a great conversation and helped me think about the things that I was already doing, like looking at old photographs and just kind of looking at them, looking at the margins of them, you know, what's in the background and what might've been happening before and after this picture, and kind of what was the sensations of that scene? Cause like, you know, some things I halfway remembered, I didn't remember that moment precisely, but those places I had been in many times, or I went to visit my old school and I went to the playground and I went to the public libraries that had been meaningful, and all of them generated kind of a buzz. I thought of it as like with like a Geiger counter. What am I finding here? What is this? It was very fun, actually, even though it was a little bit taxing, you know, kind of emotionally draining in some ways too.
I love that idea of the excavation because it pairs perfectly with the theme of your book, the art of reassembly. First you excavate, then you reassemble. And you gave so many good tips for anyone who's either writing or trying to heal from the past, where sometimes, though it can be a little emotional, looking at some of those old photos or revisiting those places can bring up also joyful memories too. Mm-hmm. Hard memories, but joyful memories.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. It can sometimes bring closure. It sometimes brings clarity. It brings some reflective moments and opportunities of who was I then and how did that impact me now, which I saw fully in your book. Another thing that you did that I thought was so effective was you often focused on objects that had powerful meaning. Maybe you can give a couple of examples of those in your memoir.
Well, the first one that comes to mind just when you were recollecting that is the process of clearing out my parents' condo after my stepmother had died brought me into contact with a number of objects and items that had belonged to my, either had been in my family for a long time or had specifically been actually some things that had belonged to my mom, like china and crystal and things that they had received for their wedding. And I was indecisive about what items I wanted to claim for myself. And I ended up taking the crystal, even though I wasn't sure I wanted it. And I brought it to my house and everything was stacked in my dining room. And I'm like, well, I've got to get things straightened up. This is making me anxious. I can't have all this stuff. And I started putting them away and I realized that they were very sticky. So I took them out to the kitchen and washed them. And as I washed them, it was like this, I don't know, like special effects in a TV show, like something started to sparkle. Like I held them up to the light and they were so clean and so beautiful. And it was like, well, of course I want to keep these. How could I not keep them? They're beautiful. They were my mom's. I used them at different times when I was younger with my family. I was, you know, enjoyed using them. And it was just like this connection, I guess you would call it, just this feeling of continuity with the past. And a lot of people who experience loss young don't have the benefit of that. And so I feel especially grateful to have some items that were my mom's that bring that feeling of connection.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I found that in your memoir, those were really good access points to memories when you brought up either, whether it be towels or an old photograph or something, those were the access points into these memories and moments. So you start writing these scenes and you took that class and these memories kept popping up. And then take us a little bit further on the writing journey. Where did things go from there?
So after about, let's see, around 2017, I decided, okay, I really do want to write a book. And I really had no idea what I was doing. I look back on that, I think that was kind of like brash, but okay. So I kind of looked for the narrative arc, kind of just put it all together the best I could, and thought I had a manuscript and had it reviewed by one or two editors, I can't remember, and got very constructive feedback. It was a very useful process and I knew that, but it was a little bit challenging. Like it was very clear that it was not nearly a book. It was a first draft, you know, some people call it a vomit draft, some call it a grocery store draft or just a rough draft. And I got a little discouraged then, like, okay, do I really have the energy to go forward with this? It was a good question. It wasn't a self-berating question like, oh, you don't know anything, you can't do this. It wasn't like that. It was like, this has been valuable. It's brought you far. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's the purpose of this writing. Maybe you don't need to make this available to the public. And so I set it aside for a while. And then like it was in the spring, early summer, and then summertime, I was doing other things. And then when fall came, my husband was a teacher at the time. And so, you know, back to that routine, like, okay, what's my writing is missing? Where's my project I've been working on for 2 years? And so I thought, okay, I am missing it. I want to go back to it. And so I opened it up and started looking at it. Maybe I could do this. Maybe I had a very different perspective. But I had also during that time done a soul collage class, which involves making cards with some guidance with prompts. And then there's some reflective process that you write about it afterward. And that was very clearing, I think. I think it brought me back to the page with a different mindset, a little more clarity or new creativity, new energy. And it was around that time that you and I had met in 2017 at the Creative Nonfiction Conference in Pittsburgh when your book was just out and you were, you know, giving talks and it was fun. And around that time when I was beginning to think, I need help with this. What kind of help where am I going to find it? I received an email from you, one of your occasional newsletters saying you had openings for coaching clients. And I thought, she was nice. Her book was good. I liked her book. I'm going to reach out to Nadine. And so that was the very beginning of 2019 when we worked together very, I would call it intensively, not intensely. It wasn't like a burden or a strain or a, you know, a difficulty, but it was very regular, very, I mean, I was very focused on this about every, I don't know, 3 weeks or so, I would send you pages. And then I was more clear, like, okay, now I'm making it a story. And you always ask the questions, my favorite one, what do you want the reader to think, feel, or know here? That's the buzzword that guides it. That's a voice I hear still sometimes in a good way.
You were so dedicated. When you had a deadline, you sent those pages and I could see the reviser in you really, really working. After I asked a question one time, I could tell that you then asked that question of yourself in all the pages moving forward. And I just saw your pages coming together so well. You know, what a lot of people who haven't written a book don't know, it's, I mean, you can have a series of chapters, but to bring them together with connective tissue and make it feel like a unified read with a narrative arc, that is no small feat. And you just worked and worked at that manuscript to make it all come together so that it felt cohesive, so that it felt like everything that was there belonged and was purposeful. And it was a joy to watch it all come together into the final product that you have. And so now it's coming out.
Yes.
And oh my goodness. So you secured a publisher and then you got to be a part of like the cover design elements. What was it like when you got your cover image? What was it like to have your book on pre-order? What was that like?
It feels a little scary sometimes, although less so now. I'm getting more used to the fact that the book exists out in the world apart from me. It was fun to receive the covers, like the possibilities, those little steps along the way. The publisher I'm with is She Writes Press, and they had asked me if I wanted to have a picture of my mother on the cover, me with my mom. And I said, I'm open to that. I've worked with designers before on different things in my various careers. And I didn't want to tell them what to do because I thought I'm not a designer. I know what I like and I know how to give feedback on a design, but I don't want to say it's got to be this or it's got to be that. Just you do what you think based on what you've read. And so I said, well, I said, I'm open to that. I said, I'm not sure I have an image that will work. Because my can I have limited photos and they're from the 1960s and you know, so that is in fact what happened. The photos that I submitted were not of sufficient quality to be on the cover, and I was not upset about that because I thought that was never my, you know, that wasn't like an image that I had in my mind. And so then they submitted, they had several different treatments, and it was very clear the one that I chose was the only one I liked. Like it had a ping feeling like, ooh, it's got to be this one. I like this one. At first, I wasn't sure. I didn't feel that way initially. At first, I was like, are any of these going to be right? I don't know. But then as I looked at them more closely, the egg with the little flower coming out of it, I thought, oh, that is fragility and strength. I just felt that that was what it conveyed. And I liked that. I liked that somebody saw that in my story.
Yeah. When I remember when you sent that cover and I saw the beautiful eggshell and the flower, I got goosebumps. I was like, that is perfect. So as soon as everyone listens to this, they have to go and order so that they can see that beautiful image. It was like so spot on, I felt. And so your book is coming out into the world. Is there a significance to November or November 9th at all?
Of course, when the fall season is like August to November, I'm the very last week of the fall season is the week of November 9th or 8th. I was open to November because my personal significant anniversaries are, my mom died on November 5th. Mm-hmm. And actually, my dad remarried on November 9th, my pub date. Mm-hmm. And November is Children's Grief Awareness Month. Children's Grief Awareness Day is the 18th, I believe, this year. And so November is a good time to talk about grief. And just even in the Northern Hemisphere, the change of the season into the fall is I think it's a natural time to kind of reflect on grief and loss.
Yeah, I agree. They talk about kind of the veil being thin during mm-hmm. this time. And that brings me to some of the other work that you've done with children. And how has your grief work impacted this book, do you think?
I'm a volunteer facilitator at a children's grief center. That was actually, it has been very impactful for me in the sense of mirroring back to me my own experience, but in a context where it's really about the children. And so my own experiences as facilitators, we don't share our own experiences. We invite mm-hmm. their stories. And I think it's really served to affirm for me the importance of sharing one's story, that everyone's story matters to them, and telling, the act of telling it is also an act of creating it. And it just takes on a form, and it gives, it's like scaffolding, I think, to kind of hang on to. Bringing it out somehow is beneficial. It's cathartic, and it's also, I think it's hopeful. It also inspires other people. So then we connect with each other. I've heard this from people who have, you know, seen excerpts of my story in various places, or talked to me personally, or heard me speak in a group or something, that hearing my story resonates for them, and it makes them talk. I've had a couple of people contact me about, oh, my dad died when I was a kid. I never met anybody that, you know, lost their mom or lost a parent young. And I've never talked about it much, but it really has been on my mind. It's on my mind a lot, or I know certain times a year it's on my mind. So I think it's just a very, I don't know, it's a powerful process. Mm-hmm. And it's powerful to witness children talking about, you know, I miss my dad, or this is what happened. And it's inspiring.
Yeah. And I can imagine, tell me, you know, if you had a different experience, but I can imagine that it also creates a whole new level of empathy for the younger version of you or anyone else.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The work with the younger self has been really, really important for me at different stages in my journey. I think after my friend's accident, the recognition that there was this younger self kind of to be aware of. And then even into the present day, recognizing, oh, the younger part of me is still this way. And one of the really key events in my later years has been attending a motherless daughter's retreat given by Hope Edelman and Claire Bidwell Smith. And there's definitely a lot of discussion there about the younger self and extending compassion and care to your younger self. It seems in a way counterintuitive, but it's really, really powerful to really say, I'm a grown up now and you're okay. Mm-hmm. I can handle this. You mm-hmm. don't need to.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think readers will certainly feel that too. I remember after the first time kind of reading the whole thing through that I felt myself instinctively doing that same thing, looking at the younger self, providing a lot of empathy and self-compassion. So when this book comes out, it'll just be a couple of days after the podcast airs. What are you going to do? What are some of the things that you have in store for the launch?
Well, I'm having a in-person event on the 11th of November here in Cincinnati at Joseph Beth Booksellers, which is a key location in the book. It's where I bought Motherless Daughters in the 90s when the store first opened. And later, it is where I have a really pivotal conversation with a couple of my relatives in the real reassembly part of my writing. And then I'm having a virtual event on the 21st of November, Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, co-hosted with the founders and hosts of the Got Grief podcast, Craig mm-hmm. and Holly. I was a guest on their podcast, and they invite people to come and share their stories, adults bereaved as children, and they're out of the UK. So we're going to have a little joint event on Zoom. And then I'm open to book clubs and whatever. I just am talking in conversation with a local organization to come give a talk about grief in January and just see where it goes from there.
Yeah. And you've been doing other stuff too. You had your own book club group, your episode on Daring to Tell, and
yes,
another podcast.
That just came live today, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle's podcast, I read two chapters and she chose the chapters, which was really fun. Like, I want you to read this. great. I'm happy to, you know, go with someone else's invitation on that.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So I'm going to ask a couple of rapid fire questions before we wrap up. In just a couple of sentences, what is your ideal writing environment like?
My ideal writing environment is very uncluttered. It's a table with my laptop, coffee mug steaming nearby, some natural light coming in. I don't achieve that all the time, but I do sometimes. My natural environment is a little more cluttered, but I like when it's very uncluttered.
Mm-hmm. At home or in a coffee shop?
At home, primarily. I don't really write outside the house because I like to get to it. I often write in my pajamas. I like to get to it like right after breakfast. I don't want to take time to get dressed and leave and like that activity. I want to siphon my energy right into the creative activity, not into logistics of driving and decisions and such.
Yeah. Another question. What is always on your bookshelf or nightstand?
Oh my goodness. Well, there's always a book. There's always hand lotion. There's always my stretchy, to do my stretches before I get out of bed, of my Achilles. And there's usually tissues on my nightstand. And my journal can be anywhere. That's primarily kept here at my desk, but it does migrate around.
And what are some of those go-to books?
Well, lately I have been reading about plants. I've been reading Braided Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Mm-hmm. And I read Discovering the Mother Tree by Suzanne Simard, which is about how trees connect with each other. And next up is An Entangled Life, which is about mycorrhizoids.
Love that.
They're all holistic. They're all partially memoirs, but with scientific wisdom and knowledge woven in. What else? My favorite memoirs, are you going to ask that next or is that?
Sure. Go
that
for
part
it.
Of your question. I love Memorial Drive by Natasha Trethewey. I love Inheritance by Danny Shapiro. I love After Visiting Friends by Michael Haney. And those are the ones that come to mind first.
Yeah, that's a good list. Okay, last one. What is something silly that a listener might not know about you? It could be a silly show you watch, something, just an interesting tidbit about you.
Something silly.
I did not prepare Peg for this at all.
No, I'm not very silly. Well, we do like to watch Netflix every night. We watch crime shows every night. Like I watch shows. I like to repeat watching shows, which is a little silly maybe. When I like shows, I want them to keep going. And when they don't keep going, sometimes I'd rather watch them again than branch into a new show and have to get to know new characters. I just want to stay in the little cozy world that I'm used to.
So, yes.
Like we're now watching Bones for the second time. We started... Wow. We watched a number of years ago and now like we just happened upon it. Like, oh, let's start that again. And it feels very safe and cozy.
Yes. Bones feels very safe and cozy.
I know, that's pretty ironic.
I love that. Okay. So if anyone is interested, where can they find you?
My website is pegconway.com and I send a periodic newsletter. And that's if you are interested in my book club, The Healing Power of Stories, which is primarily for adults bereaved as children. We read a lot of grief-related fiction, nonfiction, various types of each of those books. That's where you can sign up for that. I'm Peg Conway. You can follow me on Facebook or Peg Morse Conway on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Peg, I am so glad that our paths crossed all those years ago, and I am thrilled about this well-deserved accomplishment milestone for you, and I cannot wait for readers to have your beautiful book in their hands. Thank you. Thank you for coming on today.
Well, thank you, Nadine. It would not be there without you, and so I am extremely grateful to actually come full circle with you here today, like to be able to say that and express your coaching was... You were spot on with all the editorial bits, but you were also very warm and supportive. And that helped me deal with uncomfortable things in my own story and with any feeling, any nascent feelings of inadequacy or failure or imposter syndrome. Like, no, just do this, keep going. Mm-hmm. So I'm very appreciative.
And you did keep going. And here we are.
Right. Here we are.
Yay.
I loved that conversation. I can't wait for you to buy Peg's book, The Art of Reassembly. You will not be disappointed. And something that she said is something that I tell all women, writers and non-writers alike, and that is that writing down your story matters. Whether it is a healing process for you, whether sharing your story with someone else inspires them to think about their own story, whether you end up writing a book and publishing it and opening up a larger conversation like Peg is around early loss, around after grief, no matter what, getting your story on the page makes a difference. So I hope that if there is a story inside of you, that you'll get it on the page. It really does matter. And in fact, Peg is one of four women whom I coached who have books coming out this winter. It's so amazing to watch these women write their stories and publish them and make a difference in other people's lives. If you are looking for any inspiration in that area, you know that I have lots of different offerings that can support you. I have journaling and meditation retreats. I have a writer workout community. And then I have classes for publishing, like Publish the Personal. All of those will be offered at a discount for Cyber Monday coming up. So you'll want to make sure to get on my mailing list, head over to NadineKennyJohnstone.com so that you can get in on the biggest discounts that I'll be offering for the entire next year. And you'll want to put your email address there so you'll hear all about it. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening as always. If you have any voice memos you want to leave about your favorite takeaways from this show, go ahead and send them over to my Instagram DMs. I am at Nadine Kenny Johnstone on Instagram. Thank you always to Michelle Rado, my incredible producer. Her podcast, Daring to Tell, is in its season 2. You will love her episode, so you can check that out as well. Thank you for coming back here every week. And remember, every heart has a story, and every story has a heart. See you next week.